Welcome back to another episode of M&A Access. My name is Ekaterina, and today we are here at the Winter Conference in Charleston, and joining me, Ryan Corcoran.
Correct.
Did I get that right?
Yep.
Okay. You are Director of Business Development at Grassi.
Yeah.
So share a little bit about your background. How did you end up in that company? Why that's the career path that you chose? And just a little bit about yourself for those who don't know you.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to. First, I'm a dad of three boys, husband and dad at home. But professionally, yes, I work for Grassi Advisory Group, headquartered out of New York City. It's a premier independent accounting firm offering tax, accounting, audit, and advisory services for the middle market. I focus primarily in the private equity markets and M&A and our transaction team. And I got there kind of, I wouldn't say by accident into public accounting, but it wasn't a direct path out of school into a big four like a lot of others. I started my career in marketing, doing consulting and branding and digital marketing work at an agency in Philadelphia right out of school. I did that for a handful of manufacturing distribution brands, local consumer brands, and some hospitality groups. From there, I loved working with the technology. I loved working with the software. And had the opportunity to join a small team at a startup called FinPay. It was a patient financial management company, really doing patient payments for behavioral health, mental health, some acute care systems, and managing that patient financial experience through the full continuum. But I was the seventh employee there and got to wear a lot of hats operationally from a sales and marketing and growth team. And then we raised some money. So my first experience raising capital and scaling a team from 7 to 125. We did two minority rounds there with two different private equity groups and got my experience working with third-party buyers and capital providers in the space and loved that piece of it. Loved bringing on partners, loved the process in sharing our story and telling it and showing them the trajectory of the company, where it's going and why to invest. And then fell in love with the integration and building it and promoting people because there was a larger pot. We had more customers, and scaling the technology was really enjoyable. So I sort of started on that digital transformation piece, taking inefficient systems in an inefficient market and bringing a solution that fixes that. Mm-hmm. That led me to join an accounting firm called Eisner Amper with their digital transformation team, also doing business development. And then after a few years there, I've joined Grassi now with their transaction advisory team and supporting Grassi Capital Advisors Group, which is a sell-side investment banking practice.
That's quite the journey. You went from marketing to private equity. Honestly, but like besides money, obviously, what attracts you the most about your career and your job that you're doing?
I've always been a people person. So, I like working with the families that are going through this change. Because I saw it at FinPay when, and even in marketing, we helped a lot of companies and families that were preparing their brand for either a full exit, selling majority equity, and or raising capital. And so it all sort of tied in together around that need for growth and need for the next step of the company's life cycle. Kind of like the keynote today, like grow the business as much as you can to a point where either you're not the person to grow it to the next step, or you need more capital to grow it to the next step, and that's the time to bring in a third-party investor, whether that's minority or majority. So it's always sort of surrounded this, timeline of a company. But I love working with the families. I'm from a big family. I'm one of nine kids. And so, yes, it's shocking.
One of nine kids?
Yes. Like I said, I have three of my own. So that family dynamic, trying to figure out what's the best path for the business, succession planning. I think it's an amazing way to be an advisor to somebody. A lot of times it's a lot of the families, net worth, sometimes not, sometimes they're very diversified, but it's still their heart and soul into the company they've built. And when it's at the inflection point of trying to decide what to do with it, it's a tough decision. So being there to help them navigate those waters is very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. So as you mentioned, you are a very relationship-driven person. How has your professional network contributed to your success over time? And maybe like, where did you initially go to find all of those people, to make all of these connections, to network with people? Like, what do you say to people for them to, like, start trusting you?
Hey, my name's Ryan. No, I usually just introduce myself. And, you know, I think building a network doesn't happen overnight. I'm certainly still working on it. But I think you always go into a room open-minded. I joined a few, you know, committees, associations like AMNAA. I hosted a few, you know, monthly networking dinners early on in my career that got, you know, some people together. I read a great book called The Go-Giver, really about trying to help people before you make an ask of anyone in your network and see what you can give first, provide value. And it does take time, but most of the time that stuff comes around and, you know, you call it karma, call it whatever you want, but you do good and good things happen.
Mm-hmm. What is your best networking tip for maybe those who are just starting their career and are scared to talk to people?
Honestly, the best networking tip I have is say hello and introduce yourself to everyone you make eye contact with. It's a very simple rule, but I think many times, you know, you go into a networking event or a room, and we've all been there where you make eye contact with somebody and you kind of just give them a head nod, like just that little extra step of, hey, my name is Ryan, you know, where are you from? Quick question, like it opens the door to a lot, and you never know where those introductions are going to go. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'll meet with anybody and everyone to learn their story, hear from them, share what I can, and see where we can connect the dots. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a few other networking tips. Show up on time, do your research ahead of time, know who's going to be in the room, you know, make sure you're in the right room for your profession and your end market eventually. But the simplest, easiest to remember tip is if you make eye contact with somebody, say hello, introduce yourself, and I think a lot will come from that.
How to not be scared of people? Like, as a young individual, like, I would probably feel slightly, not uncomfortable, but just, like, slightly terrified to come up to, like, you know, an older gentleman who is a millionaire and be like, hello, my name is Ekaterina. I would like to also be rich. How do I do that? Like,
well,
how to not be scared?
Yeah, I mean,
how to build confidence?
I would just start simple, right? Like, you know, you don't need to say, hey, how can I get rich right away? That's
an
aggressive take.
Or maybe that will break the ice and make someone laugh.
You're right. Hey, look, everyone has their own style. So I would say just, you know, be yourself, like, take your own approach, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it starts with saying hello. So if you don't say hello, you have no idea what's going to happen. And if, you know, it's very, I carry this rule on the street with me. If I'm walking down the street, I make eye contact with someone, I say hello.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm in my car driving, I make eye contact with someone, I don't like quickly like look away.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, give them a little wave and you never know. And you start talking to people and socializing in that way and good things come. So,
mm-hmm.
And then the best way to face your fears is just to do it, right? After you've done it a handful of times, you know, maybe the fourth time still feels the same, but the fifth is going to be okay. You know, this is easy now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, let's talk private equity. For those who are just starting the private equity and like working in private equity business and, you know, field, what should a younger individual expect? Like going back to your days when you just started your career path in that direction, like what is the advice you wish someone told you then?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was working really for a private equity firm, but through their portfolio company. So mm-hmm. I wasn't directly hired by the private equity, but they were invested in the company that I worked for. You know, fortunately for me, I was early on in that company, so I got to experience and sit in a lot of those meetings. But, you know, in PE, it's all about speed and accuracy. So to best support a private equity firm or work within one or at a portfolio of one, you know, when the market timing is good and you want to take advantage of that or make the most of it, when your market's good, when your buyers are listening to your story and paying attention to the service you bring to market, you have to capitalize on it. So, you know, be prepared, have everything documented. Really, really good communication and good reporting is really important when you have a private equity firm that owns your company. And then the same is true in an accounting firm when supporting them. You know, when Grassi is working with a private equity group, whether it be on tax, audit, you know, quality of earnings, valuation, or bringing one of our clients, you know, in front of them to potentially be acquired, timing's everything. And you just want to, you know, be able to get answers back to the folks who ask for them.
Mm-hmm.
especially during those diligence phases, in a timely manner. But, you know, ultimately you can't rush. You can't rush this stuff. You have to be accurate in your findings. You have to be accurate in your presentation of whatever it is that you're sharing with that group. And you know, that's true ahead of a transaction. It's true during the integration after a transaction. In order for a private equity firm to not just bring capital to the table, but also their knowledge and industry expertise and their distribution networks and many other things, they need the right information. So if you can deliver accurate information in a timely manner, they have really smart people there that can figure out what to do with it and help you scale, you know, past that phase of the business that maybe the founders were hitting a wall or just felt like they were hitting a ceiling, and or didn't feel like, you know, they were the right people because of experience, age, geography. There could be a whole bunch of reasons why they might be the wrong people to take a, you know, $100 million business to a $1 billion business. So mm-hmm. I think just trust those providers and be speedy and accurate with, you know, everything you do.
Mm-hmm. So you've been in an industry for a very long time. What has been the most memorable deal to you, or a transaction, or a story? I want to know, like, if something went wrong or if something went unexpectedly. You don't have to name any names, too.
No, I think I mean, it's tough. There's a lot of, like, great stories and people that you help and interesting businesses that make money in all sorts of weird ways. You know, for me, like, my first dipping my toes in the water with that, with raising the first round of capital, which wasn't a lot of money in the grand scheme of things. You know, it was a small deal for me, but it was my first. So it kind of opened the door to, you know, kind of like, okay, you can follow this path now, right? Like, a lot of people come out of school, myself included, having an idea of what they want to do and 100 other ideas of other things you could do with your life. And, you know, having completed that transaction, getting a new provider in the door to help us scale to the next level, that first one, I feel like just the matter, it doesn't matter on the dollar amount. That first one was special because it gave me clarity on, like, where I wanted to focus for the rest of my career.
Mm-hmm. So how do you add value to those private equity clients beyond the initial connection or introduction? How do you keep them?
One way is deal flow. You know, I think what I've always tried to do is, you know, at an accounting firm, you're in a commoditized market. There's a lot of providers out there that can help PE firms and others with their portfolios, with their diligence, you know, with their valuations, with their market research. Ultimately, you know, they need someone who's going to bring value past that report, right? If you're not bringing value past that report, everyone will be shopping around on price point. And you want to show that, you know, you're not just charging fees for hours for a diligence report, but you're a true partner, you're a thought partner, you're helping them analyze the market, and ultimately understanding their investment thesis. So you can be an additional eyes and ears out there in the market when, you know, I know of a PE firm down in Florida that had a look at around 4,400 books last year in order to do 72 deals. So they scanned through a lot of material. They looked through a lot of assets to decide what to invest, you know, their fund into. They have a thesis. They want to follow it, but they also need a lot of looks. They need to come across a lot of deals. So I think when you can bring your clients in front of them as a potential deal flow partner to help them originate and help them grow their fund and help them put their capital to work. You know, that's sort of, you need to place the money somewhere in order to grow that company and you know, have foresight into a liquidity event, return that money to the fund and keep the party going. So I think the name of the game is deal flow. Mm-hmm. And making sure you're bringing quality opportunities to your partners.
Can I ask you a personal question? And you don't have to answer it if you don't want to. But how did you mentioned, like, put your first capital to work. How did you put your first capital to work?
For
Since
me?
Since you mentioned that.
Well, for me, it was, you know, buying a house.
Okay.
You know, I don't own any businesses myself. We were able to buy a, you know, row home together, my wife and I, years ago. And we've now have, as like I mentioned, 3 kids. So we've expanded, and we've been able to convert that into a rental property. So we now have our first, you know, go at some passive income and trying to expand that to a couple more properties now. with the money invested there. So really as into real estate for me.
Mm-hmm. Anything you wish you have done different then?
Yeah, I wish I would have bought the house I just bought back in 2020.
It would have been a lot cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, hindsight is 2020, no pun intended there. And yeah, so we didn't know we were going to have three kids in, mm-hmm. in 4 years and here we are. So yeah, other than that, I think, you know, everything happens when it's supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of the good old days, from your perspective, how has the private equity landscape evolved over the years?
I think, you know, we've obviously had really great years, with good rates that supported activity, you know, for really 2019 up until the end of 22. And then it got tougher in 23 as things were still happening. And 24, 25, I think, were very difficult. There's a lot more, you know, I think you're seeing a lot more funds in the market, especially in the lower market, lower middle market. And you're seeing even the larger funds dip their toes down to where the larger deal volume is. Smaller valuations, but they're hunting for quality, I think, over size right now. So I think the challenge has been that private equity firms are at the sort of end of a longer hold period than they really like at some of the investments they made at the, you know, right just before 2020 and then leading up to now. A lot of those assets are still being held in portfolios, and they want to create liquidity to raise the next fund or prove out their thesis. But they also have to protect their rate of return and make sure that they're, you know, not trading things too early, or not pushing things to the market just because it hit the end of a 5-year hold period and that's what it says on the paper. They're still very smart analysts there, and they want to understand that we're going to take something to market when it's the asset's truly ready. So I think they've had to do a lot more hands-on work with their operators, you know, working with their portfolios, obviously trusting them to grow the company and do what's right and put the right people in place. But definitely get more, a little bit more hands-on with those portfolio companies, parachute in, as a lot of people like to say, and just, you know, make sure they really understand the businesses that they're invested in and are helping them in every aspect, because it's competitive. Like I said, there's more funds in the market, and the public markets have done very well over the last couple of years. So, you know, there's been volatility, but that creates opportunity for a lot of the hedge fund groups and ultimately for folks, you know, raising funds or looking to attract investors. They have to tell that story of, you know, why is our thesis and our rate of return better than what you're going to get in the public market, or better than investing in, you know, multifamily mm-hmm. residential real estate, right? So there's plenty of areas that folks with capital can invest their dollars. And so I think private equity is at an inflection point where, you know, the funds have been around for longer and have a great track record are really pushing and doubling down on that story and that history. And the new ones have to, you know, create that brand and almost get more, more consumer brand focused, if you will. Their market is, you know, their investors and obviously, what type of businesses they invest in and those founders to be an attractive partner to them. But it's very competitive. It's a, mm-hmm. You know, kind of like similar to the commercial real estate space, it's a rush to quality. Mm-hmm. And people want to see businesses that are really tried and true and can handle a little bit of, you know, turbulence mm-hmm. in the air right now, because there's a lot of moving parts on the macro level globally. And so, you know, good investment teams, good execution teams and executive teams at your operations companies, and just staying hands on, because it's tough. Yeah, it's not like mm-hmm. the easiest market right now in the world. So, I'm sure private equity firms could tell me 1,000 other things they're worried about and handling on a day to day basis. But from my perspective, that's a lot of the high level sort of mm-hmm. detail.
So, what kind of mindset should a person have to go and, you know, dedicate their life to private equity?
I guess curiosity, probably.
Okay.
And again, you know, I don't work on the investor side. We work on the sell side mm-hmm. of bringing those companies to market and preparing them. And you know, from a financial review, even on our audit side, right, when we're getting companies audited year over year, that's building up a cadence and a sort of financial hygiene mm-hmm. and a history of performance. And so all of it's, you know, a lot of that work is some, you could call it readiness, right? Whether they go to debt or to a capital provider. For us, you know, I think it's just curiosity. They, private equity firms, they want to ask a lot of questions and really understand what they're investing in. So you have to be curious. You have to, you know, scratch below the surface and uncover what's really there to make sure that, you know, if you're going to place tens or hundreds of millions of dollars somewhere, you're making the right decision.
Mm-hmm. So that's when it comes to mindset and kind of like the personality. What about skills? What kind of skills should a person have to go that direction?
Well, one, that you should be analytical, you know, financially savvy, understand how to use the latest tools and technology, because again, you know, like going through, you know, 4,400 deal books, right? You need to understand that, you know, maybe there's a better way to do it. And you, sometimes you got to work smarter than harder. I'm on the advisory board of a company called Key. They came out of Y Combinator and 24 and have really scaled through private equity of 25, working with a lot of the top funds across the U.S. And you know, what they're really focused on is helping PE firms use the latest technology in AI, what LLMs have to offer, and then what, you know, also Excel does well, and being able to marry those two worlds, again, to speed up things, but also make sure you're 100% accurate. When it comes to diligence and sometimes even just getting to a no on a deal faster, like we're going to pass that on, is a good thing, because you're freeing up time and energy to focus on, you know, what might be your next big investment.
Yes. How do you feel about AI invading the space nowadays?
I wouldn't call it an invasion. I think I think AI gets thrown around a lot. So I think, you know, it's up to the individual who's using that platform or going to purchase something of that nature to use it correctly and know what it is and know what you're getting out of it. It's not at a place right now where you're just, you know, setting in a spreadsheet and things are all popping out mm-hmm. nice and pretty. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of manual work that goes into it. And like that company Key, you know, their focus is, yes, to use LLMs and other tools to be able to search and prompt large data books and get to an answer quickly and organize the data and be able to create a quick analysis based off data blocks. There are things that you can plug in. But at the end of the day, you know, really make sure you're double checking every output. Make sure you're reviewing it. Make sure you're testing for accuracy, because if it's not 100% accurate, it could be, you know, driving you down the wrong path. And that's something they look out for in building their product and something that I think everyone should look out for with AI. I think it's overall positive. It's going to, you know, definitely improve productivity. It's going to help companies even grow, understand their target audience better, be able to communicate better. Yeah, but ultimately it's still, I think AI is still very early on. So just double check what you're getting out of it and make sure you make it your own at the end of the day. Whether you're an operator and it's for your own company and brand, or you know, you're a PE firm and you're an analyst and, you know, you're sending reports up the ladder to the managing directors and founders of these funds, you know, double check that work and that output to make sure it's accurate before you send it to the next person.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think is going to happen within the next couple of years when it comes to, you know, the private equity space with AI being, well, not invading the space, but helping with the future generation, with just the competition overall, too?
I mean, I think it's, look, there's a, I think, I don't know what the exact average is, but it's probably between 14 and 15%, the average rate of return amongst private equity firms in the country. It's a pretty good return, and I think they'll continue. You know, I think there's a lot of businesses out there that need succession planning. They need someone to take it over to continue to operate. Many of which, you know, I think infrastructure is a really hot space right now. Manufacturing is a really hot space because those things keep the country running. So, and a lot of the people who have built those businesses are nearing retirement or looking to, again, pass it on to someone who can take it to the next level or just maintain what they've built. So I think there's plenty of deals out there. I think finding the right, you know, marriages, so to speak, between founders and capital providers is what's important. So, I think with the onset of technology, it's just going to make PE firms better at investing and probably see those returns go up. But time will tell. I mean, there's no crystal ball. I think you will continue to see larger funds dipping their toes down into the smaller deals because there's a lot of volume there. And until we see, you know, more quality at more enterprise and middle market and up deals, they still need to place the capital somewhere, so they're going to find assets, even if it's smaller than their typical thesis would incline them to invest into.
Mm-hmm. So to kind of wrap this up, a couple of more questions. What advice would you give to someone looking to grow their influence and network in the M&A and private equity space?
I just help, I think help people out. I help understand what people are looking for, listen. It doesn't always have to be, maybe your service line is where you can add value, right? Obviously, we all work and we all, have jobs to do and have a focus and have an expertise. But, if you can connect someone to another partner of yours, whether they're across the country, across the state, or across the room, and you can, tie those knots together, I think that's where a lot of great things happen. And so just continue to be, again, there's a great book called The Go-Giver out there. Be a go-giver, help people out, and it usually comes back around.
And looking ahead, what are you most excited about when it comes to your professional and personal life, maybe too, if you'd like to share anything?
Yeah, well, one thing Grassi is doing, we're expanding. So we've recently acquired another firm out in Denver. Last year we closed an acquisition in Boston as well. So Grassi is an independent accounting firm that's scaling and growing, and I just am excited for that growth. We're growing into the Philadelphia market as well, and knock on wood, hopefully opening an office there very soon, and just continuing to help, some of the founders we're working with today are great people with great families, and I think 2026, given their businesses and, not to dive into all the details, but I think 2026 is going to be a good environment for them to trade. And so supporting them throughout this year is going to be exciting.
And how can people learn more about your services and Grassi? Where should they go?
GrassiAdvisors.com. That is Grassi Advisors with a G, .com. Yes. So all of our services, our partner group is on there. A lot of articles and news updates and thought leadership related to all topics across the verticals and industries we serve. And come see us. We're headquartered in New York City. I love having people at our office, 360 Madison. I love hosting and meeting new people and talking to them and learning, how we might be able to help or how my network can help. I'm always open ears to, who might be the best player to help anyone, whether it's private equity or in any other industry.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, most important question, what has been your favorite part of the AM&AA conference so far?
Well, this is my fourth conference. So I've always enjoyed, fourth winter one, I should say. I've always enjoyed the conferences. Even down to my flight this morning had, probably six or seven of us from Philadelphia all coming down and just connecting at the airport is always fun. But we just listened to Wes Henderson give a keynote on founding and starting, eventually trading Angel's Envy Bourbon, I enjoy the product. Two, I know some folks over
business
at Bacardi who were there during that process. And that was really cool to hear his story directly. Again, that's why I love about this space is, that kind of family story, taking something that really changed the trajectory of their family forever, even though they already had a long history in the space and a lot of success in the bourbon and spirit space. But Wes going out there and doing what he did and starting a brand from scratch and having such a success. I love hearing those stories, and that's what I try to hope to create for the founders and the companies that we work with, is that same thing. Something that, a date at the closing table that really closes, that changes the trajectory of the family's life and hopefully sets them and the next generation up to come. Like I said,
it's,
I have three boys.
Inspiring.
Yeah. One of them is named Weston. No connection to Wes Henderson there, But I would like to do the same for my kids one day, and it's really cool to see someone who has done that and give their sense on how to go about it and even the doubts they have during the process, because we all have those eventually.
Absolutely. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for visiting us here on our podcast and also
thanks
our
for having
conference.
Me.
We hope to see you again next year.
Yes, thanks, Katarina. I'll be here.
These kinds of conversations are happening all the time. We'd love for you to join in, whether it's through our monthly webinars, our biannual conferences, or our CIMA certification, and then we have our chapter events across the nation all year round. You can find out more at amaaonline.com. Until then, see you next time.